Hello and welcome to our lovely studios here on Dufourstrasse here in Zurich. This is the Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis. I'm Tyler Brulé. A little bit later in the program, we are going to be talking to UBS's global CMO, Johan Jervo. But before that, we thought we would get right into the program today with a favorite magazine and a title which I've got quite a collection in a couple of places, certainly in this country. Merit Ernst is here. She's the editor of Hoc Parterre magazine. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
I have to say that this is a title, and I'm going to let you set it up a little bit. But what I love about Hoc Parterre is this toothiness. It is this incredible hybrid of a magazine which is chronicling Swiss design, Swiss architecture, and has this very interesting intersection between being both a consumer magazine on one side, but also trade. And what I really love about it is that this is not an alienating title in any way. It's something that really welcomes you in. So how's that for an intro to get things underway? But maybe that's I paraphrase it. But maybe just if we start, just tell us, where does this title sit in the landscape of Swiss media, the Swiss newsstand?
Well, you just describe it perfectly. It tries to reach out to a more specialized public like architects, planners, designers, professional designers, but at the same time we try to really reach out for people who are just interested in how our environment is designed and how we do live in such an environment.
Let's rewind a little bit. This is it's a special year, it's an anniversary year for you. When the title originally launched, was it filling a specific niche in the market? Because actually for a small country, but also a very influential country, when it comes to architecture, when it comes to industrial design, Switzerland's quite well served still. There are a number of titles that are out there. But when the title came to market, what niche was it seeking to fill?
Well, it was exactly this niche, which consists in bringing together these three topics like architecture, planning and design. And this is what still makes Hoc Parterre special, because there's no other magazine covering Swiss architecture and design and planning in the same magazine, in the same magazine. Mm.
Tell me, we've seen a lot of, and we'll be talking about this probably a little bit later in the show as well, a lot of consolidation in the Swiss media landscape. A number of high-profile mergers with certainly the regional press, national press as well. But you are something of an independent, which is quite unusual, because especially in the trade territory, you often see that titles are part of much bigger conglomerates.
Yes, exactly. So this is maybe also the recipe to be still alive. We are in fact independent. So we who are working at Hoc Parterre, we own our magazine, and this makes a great liberty to write critically, and it also makes us to be more entrepreneurial thinking maybe than just other journalists. But I guess this is still the recipe to be live, and we do have also the same problems like any other publishing house. In fact, we're part of the game, so to say. But I think we're still doing good.
And I think for our listeners, because obviously we have a number of, I think, established journalists and editors who are listening in, but also people who are interested in starting their own titles. So when you talk about this, that Hoc Parterre is owned by the team, is there a particular structure? And also, are you unique within the Swiss media landscape as well in terms of this ownership structure?
Mm-hmm. I don't really know if we're really the only ones who are organized like that, but in terms of structure, we are shareholders, but every shareholder has to be part of the team, as you just mentioned. So this makes it a little bit different from other structures. And I guess in terms of journalistic writing and working, it opens up a great liberty and a great freedom to write about the stuff we are really interested in, and we can cover things critically.
You just mentioned now, of course, being part of the game, suffering the same problems. Sometimes I think Switzerland is a bit of an interesting bubble. And the fact, of course, it's a country with extraordinary high purchasing power. There's a lot of money here. There's also an investment in design, which is one of the things we love, that things are done with a thoroughness and an attention to detail here that we often don't see in other places. But nevertheless, as you said, it's difficult for people in print, or you could say in media in general, in many places. What's critical here? Is there anything when you look at the Swiss landscape that is impacting the industry in a significant way, and certainly what you have to do month in and month out as an editor?
Well, I think there are two critical points. The one is the commercial side of any print magazine. Like you have to have clients who want to be covered in your magazine. That's one point. And the other critical point is that people tend to forget about the benefits of being of having an abonnement. I do teach, and young people, they tell me they don't buy regularly the same prints or print magazines. So this is also a critical point. How do you get out to the readers? How do you find them? How do you make them pay for your print magazine?
Okay, well, I think everyone wants the answer. How do you do it? what's the magic formula at Hochbart here?
Well, we didn't find the magic formula so far, but we try to do just good journalism. I think that's the only way. You have to really be very critical with your own work. You have to be very good at what you're doing. And so people, see what you are doing and are ready to pay for it.
Mm. Let's maybe talk about the current issue. And if we can look at that, maybe just sort of take us through the architecture of the magazine. Mm-hmm. I guess sort of the key points that, as you said, and I guess one of the hooks I always believe about great publishing is that you need to have the new, but I think good magazines always have great repetition. You become comfortable with it, in the same way that you like a hotel, you know exactly how to get to the gym, where the restaurant, the bar is. And I think it's a great navigation in media or in print media as well. So what would you say are some of the foundation points of Hochbart here?
Well, actually the structure is, as you say, quite clear. So also in a way traditional, we start with short news. We have, we try to convey what is interesting at the moment, but at the same time what is in print is just a little excerpt from that. The actualities are more on our online platform, which is newly built at the moment, and then we have a series of middle to length size articles going in depth of a subject. We do have also always commentaries specifically to the topics, and then at the end of the magazine we have like classical critiques, shorter on one page, always with pictures, images that show the things, and at the end we have a special edition of series of talks with elderly architects and designers who look back on their career.
I always have to say, I really try to sort of save these, I guess normally it's for sort of last sort of 7 or 8 pages, which are always devoted to new projects. Those buildings which are sort of, hot out of the development, and always sort of great to see that they're dissected in a way. And always, I always see it's just an amazing reference to see, absolutely fantastic firms. Let's just talk about that ongoing challenge between digital and print. And as you said, obviously a lot of the main news is there digitally. I would say many Swiss titles have been quite slow, and I think maybe quite slow in a positive way, of going sort of headlong into digital. I think, and I say this in a very complimentary way to you as well, you've maybe been a little bit slower than others. How much of there was a consideration to just sort of sit back and wait and see where the industry is going?
Yes, you're completely right. We are not at the forefront of digitalization in terms of digital publishing. That's right. But we want to be very specific. We want to be in a good way, critical and well-funded also in our online publishing. So that may make us a bit slow, as you say. But at the same time, we want to have the same quality online as in print. And that's maybe an explanation why we're rather on the slow side and not on the fast track.
Yours is a title. It's not bursting with tons of advertising. But nevertheless, you have obviously your clear supporters and partnerships within it. How important are events or let's say, you know, annuals? Obviously, you have a prize, which is very well respected. Mm-hmm. Do you have to look for those, I would say, same revenue streams that many other media companies have to look for today as well?
Yes, indeed. And that picked up when I started at Hochparterre in 2003. This was really a small part of my job. But now we really have to do much more events. Clients are expecting much more than just advertisement in the paper. So we have to be inventive also on that side and to try to be not too commercial, but really go to the content and bring something to the listeners or to the audience or to the people who come to our events. So we have to have the same quality in that field as well.
Just before we go, I think everyone would love to hear from an editor who we respect very much here at Monocle. When you reach for the newsstand or you go to the letterbox, if you have an abonnement, Merit Ernst, top three magazines, your top three titles that you have to have for the weekend, what are they?
Okay, so it is Die Zeit for my weekly update.
And how do you consume Die Zeit? Do you, when it comes out on Thursday, do you save it? And does it become a Saturday Sunday paper for you? How do you use it?
Yeah, it's rather a Sunday paper actually, because I don't have the time during the week to go into all these very interesting articles. So Die Zeit is one of my favorite. Then Reportagen, which is more monthly or three monthly kind of publishing, which I really like. And then on the third hand, I could mention a few others, but let me pick up Republik, which is an interesting endeavor they undertaken. And I do like to pick some of the articles out there and read them, in fact, online.
On screen, exactly. Yeah. And some of our listeners will know that we had the editor-in-chief of a Republic was on this week. And it's an incredible business model that they've developed, and particularly within a market like
this.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah.
On the topic of weekend, I'm going to wish you a very good weekend.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Stack in Zurich. It's just 11:15 here in Switzerland. We're going away for a short break. When we come back, Johan Yervo is here of UBS.
The Escapist takes you to places less explored. In this special edition, we hop on a hodgepodge of connecting trains to recreate the storied journey of the Orient Express from London to Istanbul. We pass by drive-through liquor stores and small desert towns on an adventurous road trip from New Orleans to Texas and visit Europe's highest airports. For the jet setters among you, we'll show you how to beat jet lag in cities from Hong Kong to LA and reveal our annual travel top 50, highlighting the best in transport and service, from the most picturesque rail journey to the airline you'll want to board for your next trip. Perhaps that next flight will deliver you to Cairo or Madeira or the island of Tsushima. We'll take you there and we'll tell you where to stay, drink and dine next time you find yourself far from home. We've even put together a wardrobe for wherever your travels may lead you, as well as an eclectic selection of books and songs to keep you entertained on the journey, when you're not too busy looking out the window spotting the places you've yet to visit. The Escapist from the editors and bureau of Monocle magazine is out now. Get your copy today or subscribe at monocle.com.
How do we make better cities? Places that work for people of all ages and backgrounds and provide the obvious essentials, from great transport to perfect places to work, as well as the softer elements that truly deliver quality of life, from urban swimming pools to rooftop clubs. Published by Gestalten, The Monocle Guide to Building Better Cities unpacks what makes a great city, whether you're looking for a new place to call home or need a little help fixing up your own. The latest in our series of beautiful, large format books is available later this month. Find out more at monocle.com/shop. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
And and you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, also Georgina Godwin here with you throughout the weekend. Georgina's going to be back at this very same spot in about 13 or 14 minutes' time. But first, as I said before we went away to the break, The Stack, of course, is in, I would say it's almost the heart of Switzerland's biggest city, and arguably its most important metropolitan centre. Of course, people from Basel and Geneva might have something to say about that. And we have been really sort of looking at and trying to get a read of the landscape. I'm happy to say that Johan Jervo is here from UBS. He is the global CMO. And probably I should almost do a little bit of a brief CV, Johan, that you are, of course, in this post here. You've had very interesting marketing assignments with the likes of McDonald's, Intel. We're really honored to have you around the table today because you've got such a keen view of media and how you see the world. So first, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a honor to be here.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably only one of the, I don't know, I don't want to say, you're not the first, but we've probably had about sort of 25 or 26 guests around this table this week. But we've got this to ourselves, which is very nice.
It's exciting.
Just tell me, let's just start, here you are working with a, obviously, a global financial services group, very well recognized, and at the same time also in a very peculiar and particular market, as we were talking to Merit Ernst from Hoch Parterre a bit earlier. I mean, this is a city which punches above its weight in many ways, and almost if we take a little move away just from the world of media, what's happening in Zurich at the moment? Because we see sort of incredible inflows of people. And the city has really become much more probably international from the days that maybe you were first coming here, when I was first coming here. What's happening? And then we'll come to the media landscape first. But when you look at sort of the economic engine, what's going on here?
Well, I think Zurich is such a center of aesthetics. Switzerland is, if you want to. And the Swiss has grabbed a really interesting way of being able to develop within global trends with maybe a little bit slower pace. So a clean city with great restaurants, great hotels, a clean attitude to air and water allows you to just live better. Mm. Being from Denmark, public transportation is important.
Do you think our listeners could tell that you have a Danish accent? I'm wondering.
I don't know.
So this is interesting. So you said, it's this sort of slightly slower pace. And this is a theme that's come up talking to a number of people. We know that the Swiss like to take a considered view about things. Now, here you are in a very competitive environment. Everyone talks about, the need for sort of rapid digitalization. But do you think actually sometimes just taking a step back, I mean, whether it's launching an ad campaign, whether it's saying, do we have to update our website? Is there a lesson that maybe we can learn from the Swiss sometimes that you don't have to rush so headlong into things?
Well, I think there is. And if you look at Zalando, I actually think that is probably the better platform in how they service their clients, in which when you buy something, you put the sticker on return and you drop it off at the post office in any Swiss post office and it just goes back. I think that's sensational that it works that easy. Mm. So taking a considerable more time to think it through is probably the Swiss way. And maybe that comes with a bit of slower pace and not jumping to conclusions. Mm.
And what does that mean from someone who is a marketeer as you are? And I guess I'm wondering also sort of moving out of other multinationals, then working in a Swiss context, but obviously for a big global player, was there sort of some resets that had to happen even for you because you made a jump from the US West Coast to then come here?
Maybe not as much as you would think, because I think if you just look at the brand relaunch that we did as a part of the strategic transformation of UBS in 2015, print was such a piece of saying this is important. Mm-hmm. A double spread print still communicates more than maybe a banner ad. We were very considerable thinking how much print and how much digital and how much would that work hand in hand. I think, I grew up in a family that loves books and print and all of that. My father was born in the 1930s. And when he became a young teenager, his father gave him a subscription to National Geographic. And that's despite that was an American title and it was only available in English. My father did that to my sister and to me when we became early teenagers. And I think some of my advertising interest started there. If you look at, you know, we have a bookshelf at home still where it's completely yellow of the back of National Geographic. But if you look at the advertising that I grew up, what was on the back of a National Geographic? Well, it was a Rolex, it was a Leica, and they were put in the context of exploring. So it was a mountain on a Rolex, and it was, I think actually Reinhard Messner was somewhere with his Leica.
I'm sure. But on that, and I just, it's interesting when you talk about, obviously, you launched this campaign. Now, I'm sure there's probably board pressure. You've got agencies, a lot of people that you're working with. You must have a bit of a role as a bit of a traffic cop as well, because I'm sure a lot of people are saying, okay, you know, why are we doing any print advertising? Shouldn't we be doing all digital? You've got other people saying, okay, we should only be in print, etc. How much of, aside from trying to develop great campaigns and platforms, is there also a lot of internal management as well, saying, hey, everybody, there's probably room for everything. We just have to figure out what the new percentages are.
Well, yeah, I think that's given in any job. Quite frankly, but you let the facts speak for you. You show what's working and what's not working and decide upon that. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, Tyler, you will know that better as an entrepreneur. Occasionally, you also have to stick to your belief. Mm. And if you do that, you can make a compelling argument too.
Mm. We've touched on this before, Johan, from time to time. Yeah, we've seen articles of late. I mean, not even just of late. I mean, but for a while. But things become a bit more pronounced when someone says, "Oh, they want to validate a new campaign," and that. Yeah, I mean, it's quite easy just to go and buy traffic now in a digital landscape. What does that mean for you as someone who's controlling big marketing budgets? Again, steward of image of an incredible brand. When at the same time you've got people, of course, want to sell you great landscape digitally. As you said, a banner may or may not work, and then also you might be hearing as well that if you want to just go top it up and prove that it worked, just reach into your pocket and you can generate tens of thousands of new likes or listens or whatever it is.
I think we still don't know what a like on one of the social media platforms is worth. Here's what we do. We do a in-flight tracking where we compare exposed and non-exposed people to the campaign and see if their opinion changes. So we will get to people that have not been seeing our advertising and ask them on a scale, how do you know the brand, what comes to your mind and how do you like it? And the same thing we do with people that have been exposed to the campaign. Mm. And if there's a significant difference between the two, my logic will be that it works. Mm. And that's really what we are holding our feet to. Mm.
Personally, maybe just stepping aside from the bank for a moment, emotionally, what do you like? And going back to entrepreneurship, if it was your own gig, your own brand, do you like great out of home going through an airport? Do you like sort of picking up your mobile device and seeing a great pop up? What really resonates with you when you think about the current media landscape and where you could spend? If it was Johan's own budget,
my totally own budget. There's definitely out of home in it. And the reason for that is it has such a proximity, in particular for retail, right? Back in the early mid-90s, McDonald's Austria that I was a part of, we didn't have money for a global national campaign on TV. We used billboards because they were in proximity to the restaurants. Mm. In my world, print will play a role. Mm-hmm. There is something about opening up, a third of a square meter of paper and looking at that you can't get from, a 12-inch screen or 5.5-inch screen.
No.
That doesn't mean I don't need to be in the 5.5, but I need both. Mm. And I think in a parallel universe, let's look at music so we don't sort of blame each other for talking just about print. There's more music in people's hands today than ever before. Now, the ones that used to make a lot of money on music might not make it anymore. That might have been the change of style. I think there's more print, and I think what is really exciting to see when you go into a kiosk is there's a lot more quality magazines than there used to be. The crap had disappeared. I don't know if crap is politically correct, but
it's fine. I think everyone gets it, gets the point. And on that, you go to the kiosk I'm you know, I'm very keen to know about your media diet, daily, weekend, and do you think it's also shifted? I mean, obviously, the role of the morning paper is not the same as it was, and it was interesting to listen to Merit how her relationship with Die Zeit, for example. What's important to you across the week, Johan?
So my wife and I just had to buy a new bookshelf. We were running out of space. So much to keep buying. On a daily basis, we have a subscription in paper and electronic to FT. I have a digital subscription for the FAZ and New York Times. And that's the dailies, in addition to rotate between NZZ and Tagi. Mm-hmm. On a monthly, weekly basis, I have two magazines. One, I think you can spell backwards and forwards fairly easy. Mm-hmm. And The Economist is probably the second one that I, and those two, my habits are that I really need time to focus on the article and sort of be in the flow. Mm. If I can get my hands on a Bo Bella, which is the Architectural Digest of Denmark, I'll do that anytime right. I can. Right.
No subscription to that?
No, I should probably, and it has been a couple of times subscribed living abroad, but it isn't currently.
Okay, well, or we can try to get it on the stand here. Johan Jervo of UBS, we're going to have to leave it there. Very good to see you.
Thank you. Happy weekend.
Thank you. Happy weekend to you. And that is all for this week's show. Huge thanks to Fernando Augusto Pacheco, who's here with us, and our editors, Kieran, Matthew Banerjee, and George McDonough. If you have any comments or queries, then feel free to write to Fernando at fp@monocle.com. Remember, we're back at the very same time next Saturday. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or on iTunes. Georgina Godwin is here in a moment. But for now, you've been listening to The Stack. I'm Tyler Brulé. Until next time, it's goodbye. Have a good weekend.